Thank you, Chonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, May 13th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga.
And I'm Jonga Kandemire.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Some journalists and members of the Women of Zimbabwe Arise Orowoza were briefly held by police in Harare today following a protest over President Robert Mugabe's recent jibe on the Kalanga people.
This language of the president saying Kalanga people are criminals is inciting violence. Tomorrow, someone, a Kalanga person, even a Shona person, could be beaten and killed in South Africa. And who will be to blame?
Two top American officials currently visiting Zimbabwe say the United States is worried about continued human rights violations in the country.
From the United States' perspective, we have long-standing concerns about human rights violations, and that includes intimidation, harassment, torture, and forced disappearances.
And the opposition movement for democratic change says it is seriously considering filing an appeal in the Constitutional Court to challenge the Reserve Bank Debt Assumption Bill, which was passed by the House of Assembly yesterday.
There were many hundreds of millions of dollars spent for purchasing grain, fuel, agricultural inputs. These individuals who benefited from these goods should be required to pay for them.
Some journalists and members of the Women of Zimbabwe Arise were briefly held by police in Harare today following a protest over President Robert Mugabe's recent jibe on the Kalanga people. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
More than 500 placard-carrying members of Women of Zimbabwe Arise Orowoza today staged a peaceful demonstration outside Parliament, protesting against President Mugabe's utterances at the end of a special SADC summit on industrialization, where he said Kalangas were very notorious in South Africa and were known to be crooks because they are not educated enough to get decent jobs. Some of the placards read, and I quote, "No to tribal discrimination, Mugabe must apologize." Woza coordinator Jenny Williams said Mr. Mugabe's remarks were demeaning to the Kalanga people and likened it to the Gukurahundi massacres of the 1980s, where more than 20,000 people were allegedly killed by his North Korean-trained 5th Brigade.
"We will carry on making them fulfill their full mandate, but they should understand this is a human rights issue. And this language of the president saying Kalanga people are criminals is inciting violence. Tomorrow, someone, a Kalanga person, even a Shona person, could be beaten and killed in South Africa. And who will be to blame? The president, who has now added more insult to injury."
One of the demonstrators, Rudoma Tivenga, said Mr. Mugabe's remarks were not fair to the Kalanga people, and as a result, the president should make a national apology.
"We wanted to show the nation that we fight for human rights. Though here in Harare we are Shona, but we have got a heart for our Kalanga people, because what was done to them was not fair."
After only a few minutes of the protest, heavily armed police officers pounced on the protesters and assaulted them. In the process, Williams and another Woza activist, Tambudzai Manangazira, were taken for questioning by police officers manning the parliament building. They, together with four journalists, were held for some time before they were released without any charge. Later, Williams condemned the force that was used by the police to crush the protest.
"You know, violence is something that we have been used to in our independent Zimbabwe. It's from a culture of violence. We are used to it."
After the police broke the protest, the protesters later regrouped and submitted a copy of their petition to the Human Rights Commission. The Woza petition, submitted to both Parliament and the Human Rights Commission, urged Mr. Mugabe to unequivocally retract his statement denigrating the Kalanga people. The activists urged the president to use his position as chairperson of both SADC and the African Union to promote unity of the African people. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Two top American officials currently visiting Zimbabwe say the United States is worried about continued human rights violations in the country, especially the recent disappearance of Occupy Africa Unity Square activist Itai Dzamara. His organization is urging President Robert Mugabe to step down for allegedly failing to run the country. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe, live from the Voice of America.
We are broadcast. We are broadcasting on 919 medium wave and on the 4930-5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, you can find us at www.studio7news.com. Text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Deputy Assistant Secretary for African Affairs, Dr. Shannon Smith, and Stephen Feldstein, Assistant Secretary in the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights and Labor, told journalists in the capital today that the U.S. is concerned about what is happening in the Southern African nation.
Zimbabwe is a significant country in Southern Africa, and so, you know, we came in trying to understand what are the factors that could improve Zimbabwe's score, for example, on the ease of doing business index, which I think is an important measure.
Dr. Smith also noted that their meeting with Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa explored ways through which Zimbabwe can improve ways of conducting business with other nations. The World Bank rates Zimbabwe as one of the least favorable investment destinations, ranking it 171 out of 189 in its 2014 Ease of Doing Business Index. Feldstein said this index does not only measure the economic freedom in a country, but also indicates the country's desire to implement the rule of law. Asked about U.S. policy on Zimbabwe in the wake of the European Union lifting sanctions on Zimbabwe, Dr. Smith said they were not in Zimbabwe to change policies and would leave their colleagues to discuss their own policies. She said America is committed to working with the Zimbabweans to achieve a democratic and prosperous nation. The U.S. maintains targeted sanctions on President Mugabe and his inner circle for gross human rights violations and allegedly rigging elections, among related issues. Despite this, the U.S. spends millions of dollars in supporting economic development, health, agriculture, and democratic institutions in Zimbabwe. On the alleged abuse of U.S. funds by some civil society organizations, Dr. Smith said they were looking into the matter.
We want to pursue transparency in our program, just as we expect from others. And if allegations are raised, you know, we want to look at those thoroughly. But we think, on the whole, American assistance has done enormous good when you look at the millions that have been provided to help fight HIV/AIDS and other reasons. But when questions are raised, you know, you need to look into it and make sure that, in fact, your taxpayers' money is going to where we all want it to see.
Several civil society organizations are being investigated for allegedly abusing aid money from the U.S. and other donor countries and organizations. Political analyst Charles Mangongera said the visit by the two U.S. officials shows America's willingness to re-engage Zimbabwe. He, however, said America is unlikely to shift its policy on Zimbabwe, as the government seemed unwilling to implement some provisions of the Constitution as well as to improve its human rights record. He cited Zamara's disappearance and the intimidation and harassment of opposition supporters in the run-up to the by-elections as examples. Media Center Director Ernest Muzengi said the visit will show the U.S. officials that nothing much has changed in Zimbabwe.
I don't think this particular visit can give us hope that this government is going to change its heart and that it will promptly implement reforms as per the letter and the spirit of the new constitution.
Foreign Affairs Permanent Secretary Joy Bima yesterday told Voice of America Africa Service Zimbabwe wanted to re-engage Washington. The American diplomats are on a four-day visit meeting government officials, civil society and political parties to get first-hand information on various issues, including human rights, democracy and governance since the adoption of the new constitution in 2013. Feldstein said they have expressed their concern to the government about Zamara's disappearance. He said the U.S. expects the government of Zimbabwe to fully investigate and provide regular updates on its findings as directed by the High Court.
From the United States' perspective, we have long-standing concerns about human rights violations, and that includes intimidation, harassment, torture, and forced disappearances. We're also concerned about long-standing government restrictions when it comes to the ability of civil society to operate, independent media, political parties, activists, and regular citizens. And we believe that these long-standing restrictions do impede fundamental freedoms.
Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The opposition movement for democratic change says it is seriously considering filing an appeal in the Constitutional Court to challenge the Reserve Bank Debt Assumption Bill, which was passed by the House of Assembly yesterday. The cash-strapped government is to assume the $1.3 billion debt accrued under the stewardship of former central bank chief Gideon Gono. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu has more.
Former Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe Governor Gideon Gono has defended his quasi-fiscal operations as necessary at the time to help bust punitive economic sanctions imposed on Harare by the West. The central bank undertook quasi-fiscal projects and introduced programs such as the Productive Sector Facility, Basic Commodity Supply Side Intervention, PACOSI, Local Authorities Reorientation Program, the Farm Mechanization Program, and the Agricultural Support Enhancement Facility. Many of the operations were allegedly abused by corrupt individuals and public officials within and outside the central bank for personal gain. The International Monetary Fund condemned the operation, though Gono stuck to his guns in his book, The Casino Economy, to describe the rife speculative activities taking place in Zimbabwe that were akin to gambling during the era of hyperinflation. Taxpayers are expected to bear the burden of settling debts during his term as RBZ chief. The Reserve Bank Assumption Bill, passed in the House of Assembly, proposes that the government should take over the RBZ's $1.3 billion debt. But the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change Member of Parliament, Eddie Cross, says the party will appeal to the Constitutional Court to challenge the bill.
There were many hundreds of millions of dollars spent for purchasing grain, fuel, agricultural inputs, even coffee-making machines, generators, and motor vehicles. These were handed out like confetti by Gideon Gono. And the party felt that these individuals who benefited from these goods should be required to pay for them. The second problem of the party was that the beneficiaries of this program, many of those should not have participated either in the debate or in the vote.
But prominent lawyer and ZANU-PF member of parliament, Jonathan Samkange, says parliament is supreme and cannot be challenged in such matters.
In terms of making law, there is no institution which is higher than parliament. When we talk about the rule of law, we are talking about obeying parliament. We are saying parliament makes law. And the other bodies interpret those laws. They don't make law.
Constitutional law expert Love Momaduku, who is also the leader of the opposition National Constitutional Assembly, says chances of the MDC's challenge succeeding are slim.
There is no basis for that application in the Constitutional Court because the Constitution does not prescribe the situation in which a member of parliament may be stopped from exercising the right to deliberate in parliamentary business.
Economic analyst Chris Mugaga of the think tank Economita Global Capital says the bill makes economic sense as it is a burden to the central bank.
If you have a debt of the government, the moment you hold on to that debt, you are killing the sustainability of the future generation. So this is the time the government should look at what we think. That's all the debt which has been incurred pre-2009, of which I personally don't think it will be fair to leave that debt with Chamanguja, or his job will just be a talk show or a cosmetic office.
But Chairman of the Zimbabwe Coalition on Debt and Development, Joy Mabenge, says assuming the debt will burden the taxpayer.
It is not the responsibility of the citizens of Zimbabwe to then end up being heavily taxed in order for the government to be able to repay this debt that it now owes to some private companies, some embassies, and a whole lot of companies who were also raided by the central bank.
Zimbabwe's total debt, which is seen as blocking new funding for its stuttering economy, stands at an estimated $10 billion or 54% of gross domestic product, after verification with the external debt accounting for 90% of the figure. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Blessing Zulu in Washington.
Women civic society organizations say leaders should refocus the international development agenda and unleash the human, social, political, and economic potential of women worldwide who are more affected compared to their male counterparts. Speaking to journalists yesterday, representatives of various organizations catering for the interests of women said media practitioners should interrogate linkages between poverty and human abuses. It is in the light that Women's Coalition of Zimbabwe has partnered with the ONCE campaign, an international campaigning and advocacy organization of more than 6 million people fighting to end extreme poverty and preventable diseases. This will lead to the holding of a policy forum on gender and poverty in Zimbabwe as part of the ONCE campaign slogan, "Poverty is Sexist."
Coming up,
a closer look at the visiting U.S. delegation with Zimbabweans living in the diaspora.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A top Burundian official is dismissing claims of a coup by a renegade general. Interior Minister Eduardo Nduimana tells VOA's Central African Service that forces loyal to President Pierre Nkurunziza remain in control of the presidential palace, state radio and television, and the main airport in the capital, Bujumbura.
The U.S. military continued searching Wednesday for a Marine Corps helicopter that disappeared in Nepal while taking part in earthquake relief operations. A spokesman for the U.S. Pacific Command said the helicopter went missing late Tuesday near a village in one of the areas hit hardest by Tuesday's earthquake.
Nepal felt more aftershocks Wednesday as relief workers continued trying to distribute supplies following a 7.3 magnitude earthquake that hit weeks after another quake killed more than 8,000 people.
South Korea's National Intelligence Service says North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has his defense minister executed for apparently falling asleep at a military event. An intelligence official said that Hyung Hong Chol, whose formal title was Minister of the People's Armed Forces, was shot to death by an anti-aircraft gun.
And the legendary Harriet Tubman, a black woman and an escaped slave who led thousands of other slaves to freedom in the years before the Civil War, could one day become the new face of the U.S. $20 bill.
Some Zimbabweans living in the diaspora have commended the United States for attempting to normalize the social, political, and economic situation in the country over the years. They say the current visit in the nation by Deputy Assistant Secretary for African Affairs, Dr. Shannon Smith, and Stephen Feldstein, Assistant Secretary in the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, is an indication that America is committed in ensuring that the country embraces democracy. But some critics say most Zimbabweans living in the diaspora are leaving everything in the hands of America and other nations, a development they believe will ensure continued rule by President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF. They argue that though Zimbabweans are contributing almost $1 billion in remittances to the country's economy, this is not enough to create a democratic nation. For perspective, Studio 7's Gibbs Dube speaks with Dr. Bruce Mutswairo, Senior Lecturer in Media and Politics at Northumbria University, Newcastle in Britain, and Nomsa Negevane, another Zimbabwean living in that country.
I personally think that The U.S. is sending two different messages here. What I mean by saying two different messages here is, of course, we know that Zimbabwe is under sanctions from the U.S. So if your country is under sanctions and you are re-engaging the same country, it's not very clear what exactly you want. And I'm not saying this because I support the sanctions. If anything, I'm of the opinion that the sanctions have not really been helpful at all. And I think the only way out, really, is to try and re-engage Robert Mugabe's government. And I know a lot of people in the West may have different opinions about it, but my personal opinion is Mugabe is part of the problem, but he is also part of the solution. There is nothing you can do in Zimbabwe in terms of trying to succeed politically, economically, or socially while trying to exclude him, because even though he's 91, I think it's clear to everyone that he is still very much running the show there. So, of course, I think if indeed they are there to re-engage, perhaps that's an admission on their part.
Ms. Nekavana, what do you think about this trip by the U.S. delegation to Zimbabwe?
I think I'm on the same opinion with him, that whatever I want to do in Zimbabwe, you have to do with the government involvement. So if they are coming to us, let's hope that's what they are going to do, and then maybe things might start going the right direction.
So when we look at some of these issues, Mr. Mtwairo, people would say Zimbabweans living in the diaspora are not doing enough. People like you and Ms. Nekavana, you are here and not doing anything for your own country.
It's easily said than done, Gibbs. And I don't think it's really true to say that people in the diaspora are not doing anything. If anything, I think Zimbabwe is where it is now, thanks to people in the diaspora. I mean, economically speaking, just think about how much money goes into the country on a daily basis, right? But if you think about political engagement, I mean, there have been many other people who have tried to re-engage or to try and change the situation in Zimbabwe. But at the same time, you have to understand that there's a limit in what you can do when you're in the diaspora, simply because, first of all, perhaps you're not really given room, right? I mean, many people on the ground, sociologically speaking, consider the people who have left the country and are living, as you say, better lives in the West as people who ran away from the suffering. So if you have not been in Zimbabwe for 10 years and you go there and you try to make some changes or to come with some ideas, people will look at you and say, like, who do you think you are? You have not experienced anything over the last 10 years.
Ms. Nekavana, we know that you're making some contributions in terms of remittances, but what else can you do politically, economically, you know, all those kind of things?
I don't think there is much we can do, to be honest. Well, the little things that we can try, like I'm from rural Matepelelen. As students from the same school are trying to get some resources for them. Like me from the rural areas, I can find a book, which is well, that's what they think we're benefiting, which we don't benefit because we have to buy those books. Then you take whatever is left from your kids and send those books to Zimbabwe. By the time they get there, they are not even allowed to go there before contacting somebody to approve that they can go there. So however we do it, I don't think it's good enough. That's the thing.
Dr. Mtswairo, in your case, you can manage to go back to Zimbabwe and conduct some research there. But at the end of the day, people say maybe you are benefiting from the chaos that is there.
That's funny. Well, I'm a researcher, you know, and of course you have to accept and acknowledge other people's opinions and views about that. But I don't see how I'm benefiting from the situation, because if anything, I think the research that I'm conducting in the country is at least helping interested parties to actually understand what exactly is happening in the country. The thing is, we have to accept that it's not easy to try and do anything meaningful in Zimbabwe, especially if you are considered to be anti-ZANU-PF, because they won't give you the platform to do that.
Ms. Nekavana, your last word.
I don't think anybody is benefiting from the chaos. I think we're more disadvantaged more than they think that we are, even if we're in diaspora, because whatever I get from my pay and look after my kids here, that means now I have to think about other people and everybody else back home and stuff like that. Apparently, we're the one who are suffering more than them, maybe. Well, that's my view anyway.
You heard Dr. Bruce Mtswairo, Senior Lecturer in Media and Politics in Britain. You also heard from Nomsa Nekavana, another Zimbabwean living in Britain.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The government and opposition in South Sudan continue to engage in armed conflict, despite an agreement to end hostilities that have resulted in the death of thousands of innocent South Sudanese citizens and the displacement of over 2 million more. With both sides dug in, the compromises needed to achieve a viable peace agreement remain elusive, putting the future of the world's youngest nation at grave risk. Many South Sudanese have long urged that those responsible for these crimes be held accountable, to break the cycle of violence and revenge, and seek to build a stable, lasting peace. Early this month, the United States announced plans to provide $5 million to promote justice and accountability in South Sudan, pending congressional approval. These funds will support a credible, impartial, and effective justice mechanism, such as a hybrid court, to hold perpetrators of violence in South Sudan to account. Furthermore, the funding will build the capacity of South Sudanese civil society to document human rights violations, work that is critical to understanding events on the ground and that can serve as a starting point for justice and reconciliation efforts. The funds are in addition to ongoing U.S. support for local reconciliation efforts and the more than $1 billion that the United States has contributed to assist humanitarian relief since the start of the crisis in December 2013. The United States continues to stand with the people of South Sudan and will not tolerate impunity for human rights abuses, but will continue to push for peace. We urge others to join us in committing funds to support justice, reconciliation, and healing in South Sudan.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union, or ZCFU, says though it welcomes the government's plans to start charging rentals from land reform farm beneficiaries, it is not happy that it was not consulted in the process that led to the decision. Lands Minister Douglas Mombeshora was quoted by the Herald newspaper saying his government will this year start charging a one farmers $10 annually in farm rental fees, while a two farmers will be paying $3 per hectare per year. Mombeshora said the money realized from the farm rentals will be used to compensate former white farmers who lost their farms during the land reform program. ZCFU President Wanda Chabikwa told Studio 7 the association will approach the government soon to raise their concerns over the issue.
Farmers Union, we only heard about this from the newspaper. We were not called to a meeting and there was no explanation to this. But what we understand is from what we've read is the purpose of the rentals is to enable government to channel that money towards compensating the former farmers. If it is going to be for compensation, because compensation is there in our constitution, it's legal that government has accepted that they will pay compensation to the former commercial farmers. There's no problem with that, as long as at the end of the day, when a farmer is paid to a level that is suitable, the farmer should end up with a title to that piece of land. Our question still remains, what about those who were allocated pieces of land that had no improvement on them? We still are not sure. Maybe we still expect the Ministry of Lands to explain that one so that we can pass on the information to our farmers.
Are you going to approach the government to iron out some of these outstanding issues?
We have to. As a farmers' representative, it is our duty to lobby government. We have to go and find out and seek a meeting and have these clarifications put in place.
That was Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union President Wanda Chabikwa speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will be talking with experts and listeners about the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe's $1.3 billion debt to be taken over by the government.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Some journalists and members of the Women of Zimbabwe Arise were briefly held by police in Harare following a protest over President Robert Mugabe's recent jibe of the Kalanga people.
Two top American officials currently visiting Zimbabwe say the United States is worried about continued human rights violations in the country.
And the opposition movement for democratic change says it is seriously considering filing an appeal in the Constitutional Court to challenge the Reserve Bank debt assumption bill.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Sithandekile Mhlanga, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.